Hello, 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 everybody. I am Pedro.
And I'm Meredith.
And what? No, we're not doing voices today. Today, we are bringing you a show from the heart of darkness itself.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we are actually podcasting in the absolute darkness. The state of Texas has cut our power, and therefore we are left in the dark and in the heat. But does that stop us from covering what we have to cover? Hell no, right?
Yeah, right.
No, we are here to cover no matter what. And what are we covering this week?
Before we go, I want to say we're not bums, okay?
No.
We didn't forget to pay our fucking bills.
No. Do you want to tell a story?
Yeah, so like, typical Texas, we have a day of hail and like terrible weather. A freaking tree falls on our house, or two big, huge limbs.
Yeah, two huge limbs come down. Now, I know that sounds really bad, but the damage was fairly minimal considering it sounds like two big limbs come down.
Yeah.
But the limb came down right on our power line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was resting on the ground, not resting the power line. The conduit that held the power line to our house was bent. And that is what gave way. But the limb was still like on the ground. So that wasn't like going to snap. It just was caught up in the branch.
Yeah.
So we had to wait like a week for Encore to finally come out here and like deal with the issue, right?
Yeah.
And when they do, it's like Thursday, 9:30 in the morning. I'm here with my daughter and my mother is about to visit in 24 hours.
Yeah.
And the guy goes out there and he's like, listen, I've got to cut the power right now so I can get the tree out of the way. And you've got to get all these limbs out of the way and you have to get this whole conduit completely redone and this whole thing inspected and up to code. And then I'll come out here and turn the power back on. And I'm like, holy crap, man. Can you come back on Monday, please, if you really can? And it was like, listen, if you ask me that again, I'll call the police. I was like, holy crap. Like, yeah. Things went like from 0 to 60, like super fast.
He was a complete and utter jerk about it.
Yeah, he really was. He really was. But at the end of the day, I think he felt kind of bad about it because he called me back the next day to try to get the power turned on. We got somebody over here to cut down all the limbs and everything like that. Even I helped move a couple of those out of there. Just, you know, I mean, that's how quickly we were trying to get things done. We got an electrician out here and he got everything taken care of and got us up to code. And Friday afternoon came. We finished all the work at 12:15 when the electrician left and took about 5.5 hours, but the inspector never came. You know, they shut down at 5 o'clock. So that was really unfortunate. We gave a little extra time in case they were coming out, but
yeah,
they did not. So they have left us in the heat. It is currently, can you know the temperature, Meredith?
Yeah, I can go look real quick.
It is 84 degrees outside. So it is cooling off. I want you to know it's about 9:45, which is pretty late for us to record a show in all honesty. It very much is. It's very late for us to record a show. I'm not saying we wouldn't ever record a show this late. It's just unlikely. Is this the latest we've recorded?
I believe so, yeah.
What about that aborted show we did in Colorado? Technically, if we put it in standard time, that might be the worst. I mean,
that
the latest show.
We did in the afternoon.
Oh, you're right. We didn't do it at night. We did it in the afternoon.
Yeah.
God, what a weird vacation that was.
Yeah, that was a surreal vacation.
That was a surreal vacation.
Hello, Donut.
Our cat came to visit us. So we should also mention, since where we podcast, pardon me, the Proteo, our podcasting studio, it's always the hottest room in the house. So now that we don't have any power, we're actually out in our living room recording. So I hope we don't sound too bad. This very much isn't a treated room and I can hear a little echo. So I know I'll have that to deal with later. But we really just had to move out here, I think, to really keep our sanity in this heat.
It's the coolest room in the house.
It really is. Yeah, it's the coolest room in the house. I mean, I think the bedroom might tie it, but it would be a real big pain in the ass to record in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Here we have a nice way set up. So I want to apologize for any extra noise, any weird stuff you might hear in the show. We're recording it under abnormal circumstances, so I hope it sounds all right. But like I said, it may be dark, but we are still going to cover Poltergeist.
Absolutely. Why would we not?
All right. So Poltergeist 2015, what do you have to say about it?
You know what? It's not a better version of the original. It's kind of a dull movie. It doesn't really add to anything that the past movie did.
I just wanted to like get that opinion right at the top of your head of this film. And I think the one thing that I want to say directly about the film is that I think it's well made. I don't think it's like a piss poor project or anything like that. I think it lacks originality and its ideas aren't fantastic. But it is a pretty well-made, tight movie. The problem is, it is a remake of a classic film with tons of great set pieces in it. So when this movie achieves just being made well, it's just not good enough for a movie that carries the Poltergeist name. And that's the toughest thing around this movie's head, I think.
Yeah.
Like the albatross of Tobe Hooper and Steven Spielberg around their neck. And it's the same thing that I think hurts the rest of the series. You know, before we get into your trivia, you want to talk about the series real quick? There's not enough movies for us to do like a franchise review, but I think we can sort of spend like 10 minutes talking about it, because where are we going to go? The power's still going to be off in an hour, right?
Yeah.
But how do you feel about the franchise of Poltergeist? Like what's the movie besides the original that you like the most?
None of them.
None of them. I like the way that sounds. None of them.
I mean, what am I going to like? The second one?
Okay.
Third one, I watch a little girl who is on the brink of death.
So that is super uncomfortable, right?
It is.
Her face is noticeably puffy. Like it looks like something's wrong. And I remember thinking that as a kid. And I think the first time I saw this movie, my grandfather, a good guy, showed me a ton of horror movies. I love my grandfather. And this was like on USA or something like that. And that was like the first thing he said when there was a promo for this movie, because I think I'd already seen Poltergeist most likely, was that, hey, the little girl in the movie died. And I remember when I watched it as a kid, I could see like how her face looked. And I was like, oh, that must have been because she was sick. And like even then, I knew that, however old I was when Poltergeist 3 came
out. Yeah, no shit.
I remember just having that thought. It's not anything like disturbing or anything like that. It's just the way it goes, you know? I just like sort of always knew that as a kid. And I sort of feel bad about that. But as an adult, like I feel even worse about it, I guess, is that what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, it's not pretty to watch.
I understand she was just misdiagnosed and literally given like the worst thing. I think she had a bowel obstruction and thought she had Crohn's disease.
Yeah, I forget what she had.
Yeah, and it really took a toll on her and destroyed her. So, I mean, it's a real shame, and it kind of shows through that film. Even though I will say, I think I like the movie better than 2.
Yeah.
2, I think I might like 2 the least out of all these films.
Yeah, 2's really bad.
Yeah, because we see the other, like the afterlife, the grandma comes back and saves them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all that looks terrible.
Yeah.
And can we also talk about Jo Beth Williams in the second one? She is hit with the mom ray gun, right?
Yeah.
In the first movie, like she's like legitimate MILF territory, right?
Yeah, she's
short shorts.
Short shorts.
Yeah, she's in her panties and like a jersey in that scene.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like I could certainly testify that she certainly ushered a lot of boys into puberty. In the second movie, she is just dressed like a mom to the nines. And I'm pretty sure that's still Jo Beth Williams in there.
Yeah.
But they have her like in business suits, right? Like shoulder pads and stuff like that.
Well, they want to show her as a working mom.
So she's a powerful working mom, a career woman now.
Yeah.
I do want to say the only thing I kind of like about Poltergeist 2 is they have money problems because of what happened with the house, right?
Yeah.
And how difficult would that be to explain to your insurance, right?
Absolutely.
You're like, oh, so your house disappeared, right? Yes, it was sucked into a paranormal void of some kind, an afterlife.
Yeah, you just have to claim it as a loss.
Yeah.
Total and utter loss.
Son of a bitch, you moved the cemetery, but you left the bodies, didn't you?
It gave me an excuse to play this one more time. Is that wrong?
No.
Inarticulate screams of terror. I never realized, by the way, that actor who does that's the same guy from Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, yeah?
I never realized that. He's the old man who gets the gas and gets infected with Tommy Jarvis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's that character as well. I didn't realize it. Return of Living Dead 2 came on the other day on YouTube and terrified my daughter, even though she was laughing at it because it had like a Michael Jackson thriller zombie in it. And then all of a sudden, like a little kid gets shot in the face. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. It was the 90s. You could just do that. So that terrified her.
Yeah.
And that's made me think of that right there.
Way to go, Pedro.
Yeah, I know. That's a little bit of bad parenting and also a little tip about Return of the Living Dead and bad parenting. I give it all in this show.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, we're out of power, man. I got nothing else to lose. I'm a podcaster with nothing to lose.
Can't call the cops.
What are you gonna tell them?
First things first,
Your daughter is here, and she's alive. This development was built on a cemetery.
All right.
So where's your trivia? What do you know about this movie? I don't know jack shit.
You know...
Actually, I know a couple things.
The facts mirror my opinion of this movie. Pretty bad.
They're lousy is what she said.
Yeah. Get ready, people. I know that really, like, gets you excited and pumped.
Oh, yeah, I'm pumped.
Here we go. Parapsychologist, entomologist Christopher Chacon, one of the world's foremost authorities on poltergeists, was utilized by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer 20th Century by Fox.
You just say MGM.
Yeah. As the official expert on the phenomenon and to internationally publicize and promote the release of the movie. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What else? Is there something interesting about that fact? I don't
know. That was one of the most interesting facts I could find.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That, yeah. That's it.
Here's another one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In the original 1982 version, the brother's name is Robbie, whereas in this movie, it is Griffin. This may be an homage to Dominic Dunn, who played the eldest sister and who was murdered 5 months after the release to Poltergeist 1982. Her brother's name is Griffin Dunn, best known for An American Werewolf in London, 1981.
Okay. That's a fact, I guess. I mean, that's trivia, I guess.
Yeah. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, it's real fascinating.
Whoa.
So, I guess, do you have anything else?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, lay it on me.
In early September 2013, the crew shot interior scenes for the film in an old residence in Toronto. Exterior shots were filmed on the West Mountain of Hamilton. The film was shot and released in 3D.
Oh, that's right. You know, that's a good thing it was a 3D film.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've mentioned that. And it's kind of an interesting fact. And it makes a little bit more of the cinematography make sense.
Yeah.
I think one of the big scares in the movie would be a lot cooler in 3D. And in 2D, it's kind of like, all right, whatever. Mm-hmm. It kind of falls apart. But I can understand how that probably would have been like fucking badass in 2D. I mean, in 3D, pardon me.
So... this movie had a $35 million budget.
So a very low to mid-range Hollywood film.
And it made $47.4 million in America.
So it made a little bit of money, but not enough to really justify its existence.
I didn't bother to write down worldwide because, you know, this movie just doesn't mean that much to me.
Worldwide, it probably broke close to even. So nobody really made any money here. So we didn't get a sequel, nor did anybody really want one.
Yeah.
I know it has an alternate ending, and we'll cover that when we get there.
And that, my friends, is the wonderful facts of this boring movie.
So, I think the only things I really discovered were, before they really did this movie, there were tons of opportunities for them to try to do a Poltergeist 4. And I think that's something that they really thought about for a while. There were lots of thoughts of Craig T. Nelson returning to the franchise with a teenaged Carol Ann. I think at one point they talked to Hilary Duff for the role. And now in 2002, that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now that seems really weird because like Hilary Duff's like, what, 36?
Yeah.
So you wouldn't think of her necessarily in that way. But at that time, that would have been perfect when they had this rumor out in 2002. And she would have been red hot at that time, really, career-wise. I guess she was at her peak. I don't know. I don't know. I don't really care for Hilary Duff. Well, I don't hate Hilary Duff or anything like that. I just don't think she's that good an actress. How do you feel about Hilary Duff? Hey, do you mind not getting drunk on my podcast?
What else have we got to do?
Dave, do you mind putting down your beer and podcasting, please? Someone has to definitively cover Poltergeist 2015. And yeah. if it's not going to be us, it'll be someone else.
This is a special circumstance where it is a Saturday night. And while everyone is in their houses, all snug in a bug in a rug.
It's not a thing.
With their power.
With their power. They're just curling up next to their power lines. That's what you believe in this fantasy.
Absolutely.
You know what? I really regret these cans now that it's this hot.
Yeah.
I think I deserve it because I just used the word cans to describe her headphones.
At this point, I'm terrified if I move like something. It's just going to be like a waterfall.
Yeah. So we did video for the first time last week. I think it turned out pretty well. And I was finishing the edit. We lost power. So I was maybe like 15 minutes away of editing.
Yeah.
From like pressing that render button and then, you know, putting it up like an hour and a half later. And that really sucks because I was really excited for that. And obviously we couldn't do it. We thought about it. We had maybe just enough like battery power to pull it off, but like it would have used all of our battery power.
Yeah.
Yeah. To do it. Like we probably would have had maybe one lantern that we would have been able to use, and then candles and flashlights the rest of the night.
Absolutely.
So we decided against that idea because that seemed like a stupid waste of resources. So we'll pick it up next week.
Yeah. It's going to be better.
It'll be better next week.
Yeah.
We're going to stop talking about how hot it is in here, but it is very hot.
No, we're not.
It's 85 degrees. We're going to continue to speak about this.
We're going to continue to whine because that's our right. Because we're paying our fucking bills. And if I get charged for these days that we're not on electricity, I'm going to be pissed. I don't know what I'm going to do, but it's going to be bad.
This is what happens when she gets the bill. No!
Yeah, pretty much.
She's going to shoot the mailman.
That's going to be me.
Aren't you glad I have a soundboard?
By the way, I'm not going to. Oh, wouldn't hurt a fly.
That's what you say.
Right. You ready to pop off here?
Weird.
All right, let's do it.
Are you going to do more of that?
Weird.
All right, that's it. I'm done. Weird. That's Death Wish. I didn't even play it during the show. I feel so bad I forgot it, but I brought it back here. Why? Because nothing matters. We're off the grid now, baby. Woo!
I love it.
We can do what we want.
We can.
Yeah.
We're here.
9/11 was an inside job. See? I can say that. No repercussions.
And we're having fun.
Helicopter kicks in.
All right.
All right, let's do this. Come on.
We open on a tablet. Tablet zombie game. As a matter of fact.
So we have this like screen to screen idea. Like the original film opens up on a standard CRT screen. By the way, a fun fact about the CRT, it stands for cathode ray tube, which is the retina of the mind's eye.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you knew that offhand.
No, I sure did.
Yeah, it's indeed the retina of the mind's eye. Most people don't refer to it as such, but it is. But in this version, instead of that, we have an LCD screen of a standard tablet playing a zombie game.
Yeah.
It's a direct parallel, and it's a nice way to sort of modernize that. But it's not particularly well executed. It's a little clunky. Whatever.
It's a family of five, and they are touring a new home.
And Sam Rockwell is in this movie, who I'm a big fan of. He eventually will win an Oscar. He plays Eric Bowen in here. And Rosemary DeWitt, who I like a lot, as a matter of fact.
What did he win an Oscar for?
He won an Oscar for Kazam, actually.
No.
Yeah, he won it for Kazam.
Come on.
Three Billboards.
Three
Billboards. He won it for that.
Yeah. Indeed.
He won it for Iron Man 2, actually.
No.
Ninja Turtles? Okay. He's in that. He's in the first one.
You're just naming shit.
No, he's in that movie. I guarantee you. You can look it up right now in the darkness. I'm going to turn this into a clip for TikTok. And I'm going to put a picture of Sam Rockwell. I'm going to put a clip of Sam Rockwell in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1989 or 1990. Yeah, I am. Just to spite you.
Wow.
Yeah. Reason for making clip, promote the show. No. Spite. That's right.
Well, that's marriage, folks.
Yeah, that is. That's marriage in 85 degree temperatures inside your home.
That's over a decade of fucking marriage.
That's right, baby. Deal with it.
Yeah, deal with it.
Boom. All right, that's the show, guys. Thanks for talking about it. No.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Griffin, who is a little boy.
He's a little boy in this film.
Well, I guess he's not that little. He's probably what, like?
11?
Yeah, that's a good age.
Yeah, I'd say he's 11 years old. How old do you think Robbie is in the first film? 8 or 9?
Yeah.
I'd say he's about 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Carol Ann's 5, right?
Yeah. Griffin walks around with his little sister.
Yeah.
Who is talking to someone in the closet. When he asks who she's talking to, she quickly says no one.
Yeah. So immediately, like, there's, like, the kids are already in on the spooky stuff that's going on. So the movie kind of shows its hand early, right?
Yeah.
Where the first movie doesn't really get around to that, I think there's a nice subtle build up to the ghost showing up. This movie's like kind of in a hurry to get there.
Yeah.
Because like they're showing things to the kids and like nobody else pays attention. I think what makes the first film interesting in the way the family finds out is that the mom is the first one to really like buy into it. Because Carol Ann could kind of give a shit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of the theme of the first movie. Like Carol Ann's like, whatever, they're here, I don't care.
Yeah, she really doesn't make a big deal about it at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, they pointed it out so obviously in this movie.
Mm-hmm. You know? But only to the kids where the adults don't see it.
Yeah, typical bullshit.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Bum, 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 bum. Oh, sorry.
Sam Rockwell, he plays Eric.
He does.
He's Eric the dad.
Eric Draven. Oh, sorry, that's the crow. Sorry, we'll cover that later.
And Rosemary DeWitt. It's the mom.
From Amy. Rachel Got Married, who I enjoy her a lot, even though my friend calls her the beak.
Madison's playing outside. Whoa. She pushes a stick in the ground and it comes back up. And it does it again and again, and back up it comes.
I think Saxon Charbino, by the way, is their teenage daughter, Kendra.
Yeah.
And I think she was in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, I believe she was.
Yeah, I think she was in The Walking Dead. I think she was that girl that killed her sister, or that killed that other girl, remember? With Carol, remember that? Like, she went crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's who that was. That's her in, like 3 years later. Mm-hmm. I think she actually is, like, 15 or 16 in this.
Griffin and Madison are playing near the closet, and when they touch it, their hair stands on end.
Yeah.
You reinforce that the closet is
There's a little haunted. Something weird going on here. Even I don't much have a problem with this element of it, because I think this is a fun idea about how a haunting affects their home, you know?
Yeah.
I think this is a much better idea about it, so I don't have much of an issue. I really don't.
The teenage daughter, Kendra, is watching a show with Jared Harris in it, and he plays...
Who I love, by the way.
I forget his name, but I write it down further in my notes.
Kerrigan Burke.
There you go.
Kerrigan Burke. And he's this movie's...
Saving Grace?
No, he's the Zelda... What's her face character? Zelda Rubinstein's character, basically.
Oh, yeah.
He's her Tangina. Parallel. Tangina, thank you. Thank you for letting me die on that vine.
Well, I didn't know what you were talking.
I didn't know.
Jesus.
Sorry.
All right, you can't make fun of me right now.
Okay, this is a very serious time.
It's very serious.
This is very serious.
We have a podcast.
This is a very serious podcast. There are no jokes on this show.
No, we don't allow
jokes. Yeah, there are no jokes. This is a very serious show. So let's continue our breakdown of Schindler's List. is that a fun? Is that going to get the clicks? Huh? Schindler's List humor?
Oh my God. No, please.
No. Oh my God. Right.
Why did we even cover that?
You don't want to cover Schindler's List?
No.
What's the movie you would least want to cover in your life? Like really break down and get to the nitty gritty of?
A Clockwork Orange, maybe?
So A Clockwork, not Solo?
No.
All right, we're doing Solo next week, guys. Not Solo. We're doing Solo.
Take those two movies and just throw them away.
Throw them away. Throw them in the garbage.
I never want to see them again.
Solo is a great film.
I've never seen Solo.
That's not true. That's not true. I mean, I can understand that some people might like it, but it's not for me. There's a lot of gross shit in it. It's pretty dull. Yeah, you get that next to the mic. You open a beer can, you open it in the mic, okay?
I will remember that for the next one.
You better not finish that before the end of the show, damn it. I don't know. We're barely at the start of the movie.
All right. Griffin wakes up because he hears something. He goes to the closet, pulls on a cord, and a bunch of old toys come out, including a creepy clown.
So we get a clown this version, and it is fairly creepy, but it's not quite as creepy as the one in the original.
Yeah.
That's sort of a theme in this movie. Like, every now and then it does something right, but it was still done better in the first film.
Yeah, it's always done better in the original.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say that like 90% of movies are better.
This is a better made movie than the Fog remake by quite a large margin. But there was one shot I liked better in that movie compared to the original one. And I don't think I can say that in this movie. I don't think there's a single thing that I like better that this movie does that the original did. These movies are very similar. They're very similar.
Eric and Amy have a moment. And they're interrupted by Griffin. Eric goes back with him and he shows his dad the creepy clowns that fell out of his closet.
Yeah. This is a weird scene, right? Like he goes into this thing and it's like a clown hole, right?
Yeah. There's a clown hole opened up in his closet.
Yeah, he's got like a clown hole.
And then they're attacked by a squirrel.
So we get a squirrel jump scare, which I'm trying to think of all the animals used for a jump scare. And I don't know if I can think of a time a squirrel was used for a jump scare.
A CG squirrel.
A CG squirrel at that. Yeah. They couldn't train a real... There's a real squirrel out of work because these assholes had to employ...
Those fucking
a CG. Things. Yeah, I know. Look at that. AI is coming for all our jobs. Even the squirrels aren't safe out there.
What does AI have to do with anything?
I'm making a hot topic.
Well,
listen, I'm going to put AI in our show notes. I'm going to put it as a hashtag. And we're going to rise to the top of like the film and entertainment podcast charts.
We're like the cream.
Yeah, we are the cream.
That rises to the top.
Yes, exactly. We're rising to the top and we're going to cover your face. Wait, what?
That's from that Leonardo DiCaprio movie.
What's he in Gilbert Grape?
The
beach?
He ends up playing like a pilot and he steals a bunch of money by forfeiting checks.
Oh, The Departed.
No, not The Departed.
Oh, you mean Gangs of New York?
No. Jesus Christ.
Okay. I'm sorry. Cozy Little Fireman?
Right. I gave up.
Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, that movie.
What about it?
Well, I've lost my fucking point now.
Good show.
Thank you.
Yeah, just shows. We should do more shows without power. I think it no, releases us.
I never want to do this.
I know. This sucks. This sucks ass. This sucks dick.
Yeah.
This really does.
All right.
I hope it's a fun show to our 8 listeners.
We have more than 8 listeners.
Yeah, we do. But there's only 8 people who made a half an hour on this show.
Well, those 8 people.
Thank you.
I love you.
Thank you.
I love you.
I would give you a hug if you were here in the room. If you asked me nicely, I'd cup a ball and maybe move it to the other side for you.
That's how dedicated we are.
Yeah.
I would make him do that.
She would make me do it.
The pimp.
So I'm a cuck ball mover, apparently. Yeah, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a window deep behind this podcast.
All right, anyways, it's dead at night. Some electronic toys are going off.
That's
the
toys
TV light, the tablet. Griffin wakes up and he hears someone talking at a TV. Fidgeting, he goes downstairs and sees Madison talking to the TV.
Yeah.
She tells her brother they're coming. A bunch of hands show through the television.
So I do like this, by the way. This is a nice little addition and change, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Where she puts her hands there and the hands from the other side touch. I do like that image. But that was about the only thing in the trailer that intrigued me. And once again, now that I've seen the film.
Yeah, that was all over the trailer.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that's the poster, I think. And it's a good image. It really is. But there's not much else in the movie where I think it outflanks the original. Sadly, you know.
And she says they're coming. But then she says they're here.
But she does it with a weird inflection.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same as, I mean, the way Heather O'Rourke did it was kind of odd. But it made it kind of like they're here. Like it was innocent, slightly ominous. Yeah.
Very innocent.
Yeah.
Like, almost like it's not a big deal to her. Whatever is enticing her is, like Tangina says, a small child or somebody appealing to her.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it's like. That's a good way to put it. And here, it's just delivered like a line.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's just a line. They're here.
Next morning, they're at breakfast. Kendra comes down and complains that Griffin fried her phone. He says he didn't. And she's pretty fucking pissed.
He didn't do anything, but like the phone is completely like absolutely fried, like destroyed.
Yeah.
So I don't know why she would necessarily think that he did that, you know? I don't know why he would destroy her phone, you know?
Yeah, I know.
It's a strange thing to just straight up accuse him of. Like, hey, something weird happened to my phone. Like, I would think it shorted out more than I would think anyone sabotaged it.
Even though I think my brothers would do something like that.
Do you? But this kid doesn't seem like that kind of kid, right?
Like, it's not that my brothers are bad. They're just armory.
Nah, they bad.
No.
Nah, they bad.
No, they're armory.
But this kid's not like that, though, right? From what we see, right?
No.
He's like a timid, shy kid.
Yeah.
We're really told that, so. Even though I think he handles these ghost things pretty well, if you ask me.
Eric goes to the hardware store, and 2 out of the 3 cards don't work. So they are fucking broke.
So they bring up this money storyline, which I think is incredibly interesting for a horror movie.
Yeah.
That you are stuck financially. In this situation, there is nothing you can do besides go be a homeless fucking bum. Like, you have to stay in this house. Like, everything you do is invested in this house. And I think that's my biggest gripe about this film is this is an interesting idea for a horror movie. Like, you know, a family that is broke having to face this issue.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie really doesn't go anywhere with it besides a couple of scenes, right?
Yeah, you really don't see too much about it.
We get a couple more references to this situation later on. And then, you know, it just gets written away. And all of a sudden, like, you know, paranormal investigators are in here for free, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're just donating their time for the sake of science.
Some force or someone throws a baseball at Griffin. He thinks it's his sister, but it's not. Some spookiness happens, and he's pretty freaked out.
Yeah. This isn't the comic book scene, is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, I believe so.
So, yeah, this is the stand-in for the chair effect from the first filming with Jo Beth Williams in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And first of all, I want to say this isn't a bad effect. I want to mention that. Like, I don't think it's piss poor or anything like that. But it is shot in a way that's very CG. And because of that, it loses what the original film had, which is that touch of reality. Because it's a one shot, right?
Yeah.
You're with Jo Beth Williams as she walks to one side of the kitchen. You see all the chairs in one place. She walks the other side of the kitchen for 8 seconds?
Yeah.
Says something to Carol Ann, grabs it, turns around, and the chairs are stacked up on each other in a supernatural way that no one could have pulled off, except for a very talented film crew.
Yeah, some very talented grips.
It's a very simple effect, but effective, right?
Absolutely.
And this movie, now, knowing that it took place in 3D, makes a little bit more sense how the effect was shot. But outside of 3D, the way they shot it doesn't really hold up, right?
Yeah.
It just looks like a digital effect that we fly through. In 3D, it would probably have been much cooler, sadly. We'll never know.
We'll never know.
Yeah, because I don't think our projector even does 3D. Our old one did, but our old one's a piece of shit. Fuck you, Optoma. Oh, man, I used to love Optoma, too, and they really did us wrong on that projector. That thing sucked.
Yeah.
We have a ViewSonic now, and we love it.
Yeah.
This is a great projector. It's way quieter. The colors are super vibrant.
It hasn't been so bad, except for our sound issues.
Yeah, but that's the stupid Vizio soundbar. That thing is just weird, man. Once we introduced that thing, we had all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
We should have just stuck with Yamaha. Yamaha! Yamaha!
Okay, this isn't a Yamaha commercial.
Okay.
Eric comes home. It has a bunch of gifts for everyone.
He does. He just went out and maxed out another credit card anyway.
Yeah, I don't understand this scene. It's like, you have a scene where he's going for broke, and then he's spending money on credit? Jesus Christ.
Okay. My theory on this is that this movie was written during the financial crisis.
Uh-huh.
What I just talked about, there being more of a financial element to this plot, was heavily woven through it. This screenplay is a little bit strange here. It was written by David Lindsay Abaire, and he is a Tony Award-winning and Pulitzer Prize-winning for writing stage plays. So that's a pretty high-class guy, but he's not known for writing screenplays.
Yeah.
And he wrote the screenplay to this film. So I think originally this movie might have had a very different, maybe more serious tone. I'm not real certain. If anybody's ever seen the film Rabbit Hole, he wrote the original stage play for that. And that's a pretty dark movie that still has a lot of human heart to it.
Yeah.
So I think there might have been a more realistic human edge to this movie that's gone now. And I don't really know why. I think it was written very close to that financial collapse, and there was more about that in the movie. And in 2015, that wasn't really a thing anymore, right?
Yeah.
So I can understand them sanding some of those elements away, but it just feels like half a storyline is there. Not even half. I'd say a third of a storyline, right? Literally just the setup.
Absolutely.
There's no tension from it. There's no because after the scene, he just kind of tells her, I'll make more money or something like that. And then he never brings it up again.
No.
He never brings it up again. Like I say, he just brings in expensive paranormal investigators and it's fine. Nobody cares.
Yeah. But, it's also implied that they do it for free, too.
Is it?
Yeah. I always thought they did.
Why? They got to eat.
The lady in the original movie is so sympathetic to their issues.
Yeah. But what's she doing to eat? How's she paying the bills?
Well, I think it's research.
Research for what? Research on how to go hungry?
Well, that's the way.
Research how to live in a cardboard box?
That's the way it is when you're trying to, make it in the...
Make it in what?
The science world.
In the science world? You think there are a bunch of scientists out here living in a cardboard box going oh, man, I hope I get some good science together so I can maybe get an apartment.
What?
What are you talking about here? They have to be getting paid, okay? They have to be getting paid. Who is, why? Why? How are they making money? Who's paying for them to be there?
The school.
What school?
The school that they're...
What school?
The school that they're at that funds them.
What? There's no school funding here. They don't go to fucking...
They're peer psychologists at a college.
What college?
Columbia.
Columbia. Well, there you go. Plot solved. Thank you. You put more effort into it than the screenwriter.
Well, there you go.
I really hope there's not a scene where they go and talk to them at a college where it's fully explained and I just fell asleep during that part.
You never know. It could happen.
It'd be in your notes.
Yeah.
It'd be like that time we thought we were crazy about the Pulse suicide. Remember?
Yeah.
I was like, did we miss it? Right as the credits were rolling, where did that go? Only for realize it's not there in the theatrical cut.
Yeah, bullshit.
Yeah, fuck you, Pulse theatrical cut. Fucking bullshit. Hey, Kristen Bell, kiss my ass.
Hey, whoa.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I love Kristen Bell. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, this is a Kristen Bell friendly house.
We really like Kristen Bell. Even with Frozen always being in our ears, we still love Kristen Bell.
Well, I like her for Veronica Mars.
Yeah, and who turned you on to Veronica Mars?
You did.
Yeah, who's the first guy to mention that to you?
You.
You're like, that show sounds stupid, and then you were like, hey, I need the rest of this now.
Well, you got to remember, back then I wasn't watching TV.
Yeah.
And then I came to TV, and it's like, I'll never leave you again.
And then it was like, you're like, it's a show about a little girl who's a detective. Like, no, she's in high school.
Well, because
she's in high school and solves crimes.
My roommate at the time was also the same way as I was. She wasn't like really into watching a whole lot of TV. Uh-huh. So it wasn't that big a deal. We were perfect roommates.
Yeah.
And she bought a TV. And you had started telling me about this TV show, and we started watching it, and we were fucking hooked.
Yeah.
We would come home together and, like, watch it like an old married couple.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I told you, like, once you start watching it, you're really going to get into it, because the mystery is pretty cool. And Kristen Bell is just engaged. She just grabs you from the first word, and she won't let you go with that performance. She's amazing as Veronica Mars. And she's been great in a lot of other stuff. I love Kristen Bell.
Isn't a podcast
about thank you for coming to our Kristen Bell Bell podcast.
Yeah, and you know what? Before we continue on this beautiful road we're on.
Oh my God, are you doing it now? You really?
Let's talk about our social media.
Oh my God, you're doing it now. That way through the show. It doesn't matter anymore. No one's listening. You're supposed to remind me at the start of the show.
Please, if you'd like to comment on how bad we are at promoting our show.
Yeah, if you want to talk about that.
Go to grittyrebootcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, that's where you can send your emails in 1995.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
And then also you can search for Gritty Reboot at TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube as well. We are active now on YouTube. We do some game streams. Not right now. We have no power, but we've done some in the past. We really wanted to do one that night we lost power. Right?
Yeah.
We were talking about finally going back to Fallout. Now I got to figure out a fucking way to buy the DLC.
Yeah.
Without power. I was like, oh, I'll just fire up the Xbox. Like, oh, wait. The sale ends on Monday, so I want to buy those games. I want them.
Well, like I said, Eric comes home with a bunch of gifts for everyone. How did he pay for it? Griffin is complaining. No one is listening to him while he is talking because Eric is, like, totally...
He'd give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's ignoring him, and he's screaming that the house has weird stuff and is haunted that he's seen time and time again, and nobody cares. Because no one would listen to a kid in that situation, so I do kind of like that. No one's going to listen. Like, if our daughter came in here and said, the house is haunted, I'd be like, hey, yeah, whatever, hold on, I've had a long day.
I don't know, I would listen to her.
Would you?
Well, yeah, because I would like to know if ghosts are real.
I just, like, the second Maya's like, I feel something in her house, you would just go on your knees like, my God, she has the sight, doesn't she? And you'd be like, tell me where the spirit is. We shall summon it together.
Yeah,
I don't know why you
would believe her.
Yeah, you became a mystical Southern Belle in this scenario.
Yeah, I did.
I will find a way to see them through to the light.
Why, Pedro?
Because I can, that's why.
All right, we are getting off topic.
I know, this is like our longest show ever, and it's about Poltergeist 2015.
Well, welcome to No Power.
Yeah, welcome to No Power Gritty Reboot 2010.
The parents go out, and it's just Kendra and the other kids. Eric and Amy are at a dinner party.
We get a really clunky exposition about the corpses, right?
Yeah, the development they live in was used for a cemetery.
Yeah, it was originally a cemetery. We really get this lazily introduced. Like, I feel like this was an element of a late rewrite or a reshoot. Like, this really feels tacked on.
It's all very clunky.
It's very tacked on as well when Jared Harris mentions it later, but we'll get to that when we get to it.
Kendra is on her phone, and it starts glitching.
Again.
Griffin is terrified by the tree outside in the storm. Kendra goes looking around. She still has her headphones in, and they're just like spouting out static noise.
Yeah.
She looks down, and the floor has gone gross, black, oozy puddle.
Yeah, there's just all this ooze everywhere all over it. So she, of course, goes to step in it.
And she tries to get away, but it grabs her.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Griffin gets attacked by clowns. The creepy tree breaks through the window and goes after Griffin.
This isn't a bad jump scare, by the way, with him, with the clown.
Yeah.
But it's just not quite as well executed as what's in the original. Feel like I'm being a hater towards this film, but once again, I'm not saying this sucks or anything. It's just not quite as good as what we've seen before.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. And even the same thing with the tree. Even if I do like the way it just comes in and grabs him. And the way the tree sort of teased over the glass, I did like that. You know, it kind of was like Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
I mean, that's one element I like. Well, two things. But it's still not better than what we saw in the first film.
Eric and Amy come home and Griffin is hanging in the tree upside down.
Yeah, they literally like drive up on him and like the tree's like spitting him out.
Yeah.
So they see like the paranormal activity straight up, which is fine. That happens that way in the other film too.
He is let go once the parents near. Kendra comes running out and saying she can't find Maddie. Griffin is in the living room and he hears Maddie in the TV. He calls for his mom and dad and they come running. They hear her in the TV.
Yeah.
The parents are obviously freaking out. They can't really call the cops. I mean.
Yeah. So listen, this is a strange thing they do in this film. They actually have this conversation, which is glossed over in the first movie. Like, what do we do? And immediately Sam Rockwell says, we can't call the police. They'll think we're crazy, which is true.
Yeah.
But it's weird to kind of say that, right? In that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strange thing to think, right?
Absolutely.
Like, they were trying to cover a plot hole in this remake that didn't really need to be covered. Like, it's okay. We don't need to know exactly what they did, but we understand that you don't want to call the cops and say, like, our daughter was kidnapped into a phantom world because they're going to think you're crazy and send you to jail. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, but, and then your kids are taken away forever.
But we don't need that conversation, especially right there, because that's not the first thing you're going to say, right?
Yeah.
And even if it is, the way it's done is just really awkward. It just doesn't really flow well at all. As great an actor as Sam Rockwell is, it's just not worded well.
Amy goes and sees the parapsychologist with Griffin. She believes their story. They come to the house.
Oh, so they do go to a college.
I thought they went to a college because it looked like a place where you would do research.
What do you mean by that?
Well, parapsychologists are constantly trying to make themselves legitimate in the eyes of the science world. And so I figure parapsychologists are in a lab somewhere.
Okay. Like
doing parapsychology.
Are you a parapsychologist, Mark, is my question. Because you have been very kind to this profession. And like, they are saints. They work for free until your ghosts are dealt with. Like, are you in their lobby? Is that what this is?
No.
Is this their propaganda show?
No, that's what I picture when I picture a parapsychologist. I picture this like dude in a lab coat. Looking at magnifying glasses.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to generate all this in AI to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have anything else?
No.
Oh, well, crap.
Fuck your AI.
Well, I can't draw it. I'm not an artist. I have to steal things from an AI.
Right.
It's okay. AI stole it before I did.
Like I said, Amy goes to see his parapsychologist with Griffin. She believes his story. They come to the house. Greg from the Succession franchise.
Yeah, he's one of the parapsychologists.
Tells about a piano moving across a parlor floor over 7 hours. Then all of a sudden, some wacky shit happens.
Wacky shit? Is that how you worded it?
Yeah.
I don't remember quite what happens, but it's once again, it's not quite as cool as this gag in the first movie where they open the door to Carol Ann's room and all this shit is just flying around.
Eric vomits black goo from his mouth.
When he goes to get drunk, right? And
it goes away.
Yeah, he goes to like chug some beer. He ends up just like vomiting that black stuff and it like comes out of him. It's sort of a parallel to that scene in the first film where the guy rips his face off. But once again, it's not quite as cool. We only see it through a sink. So I feel like I needed to zoom in on the image to see what was really going on.
Hell yeah.
It was literally the worst way to show us that. Thank you, movie.
The parapsychologists, they wire up the house. Greg has to do something in the closet.
Greggy. He accuses them of being frauds before this, right?
Yeah.
Right? He talks to Carol Ann. He talks to faux Carol Ann. Not faux Carol Ann. Who's he talking to? He talks to the other kid, right? What's his name? Robbie? No, that's not the name of the other movie. Griffin. Yeah. He talks to Griffin and he's like, so your dad's harder for money, right? He lost his job. He possibly tried to pull a con. And then he is accosted in the ghost closet. The ghost closet.
He starts to drill. He's knocking a bit and he starts to drill.
He drills.
And then a big hole is punched through, which grabs his drill. He reaches in the hole.
As you should. Any hole you ever see that appears like that, just throw your arm right in there.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, what's the worst that can happen, right?
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Something grabs his arm. The drill through the wall just before it releases him. Whatever lets him go, he goes downstairs and lies about getting the sensation back in the closet.
Yeah, so he is attacked by the drill. And I think this is a decent little scene.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, this, I guess, is also the stand-in for the guy ripping his skin off. And that's nowhere near as cool. Even if it does have Greg from Succession in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he should have got the company.
I don't remember his name. I just know him as Greg.
That's all he is. He's only Greg. He'll only ever be Greg.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's how you feel about that actor? What if he's a listener?
What if he's our unsubscribe, one star? He's like, I was just about to tell Jeremy Strong about this show. I was going to DM Brian Cox to listen, but no more, jerkhole.
Yeah, he's done with us.
Yeah, from now on. Actor known as
Greg
or Nicholas Braun.
Nicholas Braun, we're sorry.
Nicholas Braun,
we love you.
Nicholas Braun, we're very sorry. We think you're a fine, talented actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Fuck you.
Jeez.
No, he loves it. We're buddies.
Amy calls out to Madison. Nothing happens at first.
Yeah.
Then she shows up. She says someone is with her, and they start screaming.
Yeah, they lean more towards in the horror element quickly as well, where the movie has a little bit of like Spielberg whimsy here, you mm-hmm. know, where it's like, I felt her run through me. Only after that are we really introduced to like a really negative element.
Eric goes upstairs. He calls out for Maddie. He thinks he sees her, but it's not her. It's an imposter. A bright light comes through the closet.
Yeah.
A portal opens up and something comes out. A table? Maybe? Jared Harris shows up, and he's Tangina in the story, which we already talked about.
He plays Tangina. It is cool he was introduced on the TV show earlier.
Yeah.
His name is Tangina. He doesn't have his own name. He goes unexplained in this movie.
He looks around the house, and he goes into Maddie's room, basically.
Yeah.
Comes out and asks about Maddie. Asks if she's special. Griffin says she talks to ghosts.
He just kind of makes that deduction because he has imaginary friends.
Yeah.
I guess she got taken by the spirit, so that's all the proof he really needs. I mean, I guess that part's fine.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me.
It doesn't bother me?
No.
Yeah.
They talk about their community is built on a cemetery, but they never move the graves.
Yeah, this is just a theory that Jared Harris's character has, right?
Yeah.
He just kind of throws it out there that they probably never move the bodies. And we accept it as canon. And it's a clunky way to do it. Kerrigan Burke, by the way, is his name. And it's just nowhere near as interesting this way. And this feels like it was added in very late or a reshoot or ADR. Either way, I really dislike the way they use this element of the movie.
If she goes into the light, she's gone forever.
Yeah.
Eric just wants his daughter back.
And this is Sam Rockwell's best moment.
Yeah.
He cries here, and it's actually really well done.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but as once again, the money element of the story, the financial trouble that the family is going through is completely lost. It's gone. It's destroyed. There's no element of it anymore. Like, there's no extra level of tension. It's all about trying to get Carol Ann, faux Carol Ann, out of the other side. Any other interesting elements of this family is really left aside, except for what Greg just accused the family of a scene earlier.
Yeah.
You know, all that's gone, and it's a shame. But yet a less interesting, more shallow film.
Kendra and Griffin are curious about Kerrigan. Scars on his legs. He shows them and tells them the tales of each scar.
Yeah, this is kind of fun. This is one thing. I mean, like Jared Harris doesn't suck or anything. He's quite good in the movie. It's just not as interesting a character as Tangina. It's the curse of this film. Everything was just like done better before. Huh?
He's kind of like a pirate. He has all these stories. Like the guy from Jaws. The
pirate from Jaws. What movie are you talking about? Yeah.
And they talk about each scar.
You're like, you know, the Marine from Jaws? Like, what? He's a lot like his character in Benjamin Button, where like his tattoos are his art.
Yeah, whatever.
Kind of reminds me of that a little bit. That's a better movie, though. Much better film. I know you hate that movie, but it's a better movie. What do you know about cinema, huh?
Well, I have been a fan for many, many a moon.
Many a moons.
Why we do this podcast, by the way?
Because of the moon?
Yeah.
Mm.
Forget this podcast, my idea.
It was. I was the one that came up with the idea for a podcast.
But you are the heart and fucking soul of this.
That is true. I push the show through no matter what.
Yeah.
I was the one who said, we're going to record in the dark. I don't give a shit. I got a battery. It's going to last however long this is. We've hit the hour mark. It's time to get moving. I don't care how long the show is.
All right.
Fuck it. What else we got to do?
Yeah, everybody's just going to have to suffer through our misery.
Oh, yeah, you suffer. Yeah, deal with it. Yeah. I hope you're really enjoying the show, guys.
They get ready. They get a rope. They push it through the portal.
Yeah, they really run through the sort of setup here, but it's okay.
They're going to send the drone in. Griffin flies it.
They needlessly start from downstairs to start the drone.
They fly
it. And I like that this is their ace in the hole. Like, there's a gag with, like, Jared Harris not being able to fly the drone, right?
Yeah.
So Griffin has to do it. And once again, they start downstairs, and there's, like, a long buildup that's completely pointless to them finally getting through the other side, and the signal magically works. I remember one time I tried to use my drone when I was inside the Erickson training facility, and, like, the radio signals there caused my drone to go right no matter what. I'm pretty sure the goddamn paranormal other side would probably have some interesting effects on the RF signal to pilot your drone.
Right?
Bitch.
Well, they fly it into the evil closet nonetheless.
Yeah, they fly in that closet, motherfucker.
They see the other side, and it's just dead bodies everywhere. Yeah, it's a lot. Around.
This effect is okay.
I called him Madison.
I don't really hate it. I'm not in love with it either, but it's fine. I know a lot of people thought it was CG trash. I don't think it's that bad, to be honest. I think it's all right.
Honestly, I think it's interesting that they tried to show the other side.
Yeah.
That they took that chance in trying to show what the other side might look like, because you don't get that in the original.
Yeah, if that was one thing you were going to try to change, I think that was a good idea. I just wish it could have been...
That's a positive on this.
It is a positive. I wish it could have been a little bit better, a better vision of it. It's not quite as bad as something like, I don't know, like the Speed Force and the Flash. That looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
It looks really good in Justice League, the Snyder version, and looks awful in that film. So it's not quite as something as awful as that, like how the afterlife might look, but it could be better.
Yeah.
It's not the strongest effect, but I'm glad they changed something up.
Amy and Kerrigan argue who goes in, but Griffin takes the matters into his own hands and goes in after Maddie.
And I think this is another positive change with him going in. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't necessarily buy a lot of his guilt, but he does show it throughout the movie, so I'll take it. This is a nice change.
I agree. Amy and Eric go downstairs and wait for Kerrigan's signal to pull on the rope. The drone films Griffin as he searches for Maddie. He finds her, but she says they will never let her leave. They lose the rope, but Griffin and Maddie come through the portal anyways. They rush them to the tub to get them to wake up. Finally, basically the family packs their bags and
yeah.
Go to the house.
Yeah, they're getting out of there.
Kerrigan tells Griffin about the scar, but it's just something ordinary. So when he was talking about the scar, he says, I'll tell you about this one later, and he finally does.
It's like a boom operator fell asleep and dropped a sharp microphone on him?
Yeah, I guess.
Is that what he's saying, and it scarred his hand up real bad?
Yeah.
What the fuck kind of bullshit story is that?
I don't know
that Like, story. You work with microphones. You know, there's no microphone that's going to cut you up. Much less a fucking boom operator going to fall asleep. He's going to put that microphone down next to him. Bullshit. I don't know.
This microphone looks menacing.
Does it?
Yeah.
Do you think that could cut you up?
Menacing microphones.
Yeah.
I think it might.
You think if it fell down, it'd fuck you up?
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know.
Maybe I was wrong. Maybe I was wrong.
It's shifty.
Either way, as someone who's worked on a film said, I think that story is absolute bullshit. And somebody should have said, can we change this up? Because you're not going to have a fucking boom operator drop that shit and cut his hand up that bad.
Yeah. Maddie says the ghost never went into the light. Eric tries to reverse.
So this is
present stops their car, then flips it and throws it into the house.
So this is super disappointing because they have this moment with Maddie where she slowly says, like, because the older sister asked to do the line, this house is clean. And he does his version of it. And then she kind of introduces, but it's not. And then the way she does it is supposed to be like a surprise reveal. You know, mm-hmm. It's like a really piss poor version of that scene in The Ring where at the very end, Naomi Watts is on the bed with her son and she's talking about that she saved him and he's going to be fine. And then he says, and then we got Samara that well. And he sits up and he's like, you helped her?
Yeah.
Why would you do that? And like the look of seriousness on her face, like, no, no. And then it dawns on her. Wait, this spirit was trying to kill people. Why did I let it out? That's a good, like, slowly taking safety into something horrible and dangerous, like the danger is still around the corner. Mm-hmm. Like that's a good example of it. And this scene just rushes through this little reveal just so we could have this car crush.
Yeah.
And initially, I think this is actually an alternate version. I think they do a scene where they just lead into it in a different way. I don't remember how they did it, but they don't have Maddie say this line. So this was a reshoot that they did to reveal it this way. So it was a last minute change. And it feels that way again. Mm-hmm. It feels poorly done and tacked on. But the effect does look kind of nice.
Maddie gets sucked upstairs to the closet. Amy runs after her.
It's a neat little effect where like a ghost grabs her leg and pulls her up the stairs like she's a rag doll.
Souls from the other side grab her.
Yeah, like they literally just pop right out of that thing. I think it looks okay.
Kerrigan goes into the house.
He says he's the only one that could lead him into the light. He has this kind of relationship with Jane Addams. It doesn't really go anywhere, but it's introduced, right?
Yeah.
Like it feels like this line is redemption. It feels like the end of a redemption angle, right?
Yeah.
It feels like there was something that he's finally achieving in his life. And there's no buildup to this, right? Mm-mm. There's no other part to this. Like it really feels like there's something missing here that we didn't get to see or written out of this movie at the last second or reshot that got sanded away, because it really does feel like this is him atoning for something, but we have no idea what the fuck that could be.
No, we sure don't.
And we get a certainly less interesting film because of that.
So Kerrigan goes back into the house. Eric gets his family out of the house. Then Kendra, who is stomping on the TV.
Yeah, there's a nice gag with the teenage daughter, like just losing it, just killing that TV.
Kerrigan goes into the portal. The family is outside and they're trying to escape. Dead bodies come from the ground. They escape and you can see the neighborhood has come to watch.
Yeah, their house is going to explode here in just a minute. Eric has to milk his way out of there, though. Like, he has to slowly dick around before he just finally kicks his way through the window, right?
Yep. Afterwards, Dr. Brooke and gang look for Kerrigan, and he pops up on the radar.
Yeah, he's still just in the house.
The family goes house hunting, but they flee as the agents show the property. The end.
Yeah, they see a creepy tree. Just one little extra bit of trivia here. There was an alternate ending where they're driving away and Kendra's friend calls them and says, like, you can't believe what's going on. And she has like a voice call of, a video call of her talking with the explosion of the house behind her. And the mother throws the cell phone out and that's how it ends. You never find out if Jared Harris is okay. So there's a scene here at the end of the credits where Jane Addams walks in on Jared Harris while they're doing his TV show. Mm-hmm. To imply they got back together. I think in the original cut, he just died there. And this movie sort of retcons him alive.
Yeah.
I don't really care. It's whatever.
All right. You ready to talk about reviews?
Well, let's talk about what score you'd give it here.
Oh, this movie, I would give a 4.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that one, a 4. We have really no disagreement here. I think it's fairly well executed. I think a lot of things in this movie are well done, but it gets points off for simply being a pale imitation of the original film a lot of times, even if that's not really the goal, it just ends up being that way, sadly.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Tis what it is.
Yeah, you're really better off watching this film. At best, it's decent, but at most times it's mediocre.
All right. This movie, 2.7 user review, 4.9 out of 10 on IMDb, 29% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 47% on Metacritic.
Rough scores.
And I chose a 10-star review. When you have to remake, you can't really set it up to the original to be exactly like the original. That would be boring and a waste of film. I watched the original when it was on TV one Halloween and fell in love with the film. Everything about it was wonderful. I think I was 7, 8. Anyways, I went to go see this the Friday that it opened because I was so excited to see it. Sam Rockwell was one of my favorite actors from the forgetful time between 1986 and 1991, as he starred in Clown House, which was a marvel. Anyways, I was watching this movie, and even though it does have jump scares, the idea that they were able to remake the movie and still have a good idea of the cast and how the characters were was good enough for me. Sure, it was no Spielberg, but nothing will ever be the same as the original. I like to view this as its own movie and not one connected to the original, because it looks better, feels better, and it all in all is better. The character Madison was well thought out and was a good new take on Carol Ann. I liked how well the family reacted. They felt more like a family than other remakes or sequels. Cough, cough. Poltergeist 3, cough, cough. They felt more human. I do have cons for it, though. I hate jump scares. They aren't scary, but
there are a lot of them in this film. We didn't mention that, but there are. Tacky
waste. Given that, some movies kind of need at least a few to keep the ball rolling.
Yeah.
This movie desperately needed it, as it hadn't, most people would call it a yawn fest or a snooze-a-thon.
Snoozeroo, is it sometimes known in Australia.
And not only that, but it would make the teenagers nowadays want to know more and seek the original. That's why this movie helps rather than destroys the series' reputation. I like the movie and will gladly see it again. See, I think that he takes up for this movie. He's willing to die for this movie.
That's what I appreciate. You know, one thing I wanted to mention to compare and contrast the two movies is the relationship of the parents.
Mm-hmm.
I think their relationship just doesn't come through at all. Sam Rockwell is great, like he always is. But I think Rosemary DeWitt is just really off in this. She doesn't have a lot of great chemistry with Sam Rockwell for some reason. No. I don't know why. You just don't really feel it like you did with Joe Beth and Craig T. Nelson. Yeah. They don't feel like a married couple. There's not a closeness between them, which I think really enamors you to Craig T. Nelson and Joe Beth Williams' versions of these characters in the first film. Like, you really feel for them because you feel like they're a real marriage and they're real people just trying to live their lives there, and they're thrown apart here. These just feel like some characters in a movie. Yeah. Like, they're just kind of stock characters, and that's all they really feel like. And it's kind of a shame because I think there's better talent here, and it just doesn't serve them. But I know he liked that for some reason. I just wanted to mention, I think that's one of the weakest elements of the film, is the relationship between the two parents, when it's a real delight in the original.
Yeah, they clearly had great chemistry, Craig T. Nelson and what's her face?
Joe Beth. Yeah.
All right, well, that's our show in the darkness. No power.
Yeah.
Heat.
No Ebert review this week, sadly. In 2015, Ebert very much did. So he did not review the film, even though RogerEbert.com did give the movie 1.5 stars.
Yeah. All right, bitches. You guys have a good one out there.
All right. Enjoy your power and your AC. Yeah, and your,
I love that
your
shit.
Your wonderful modern inventions while we sweat our fucking balls off here.
Aren't you so nice?
Oh, I bet you just love it, don't you? See ya.